Ah, Lord God, truly I do not know how to speak, for I am only a boy. Jeremiah and his response to God's call, I am only a boy. Jeremiah is hardly unique when it comes to his effort to dissuade, deflect, deter the call of God. Only a boy. Only. Standing before the burning bush, Moses said, O my Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor even now, that you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. I am only slow of speech and slow of tongue, Moses said to God. How can I deliver Israel? My clan is the weakest, and I am the least in my family. That's Gideon responding to the angel of the Lord. I am only from the weakest clan, and I am the least. I am only the least in my family. Isaiah's response to the Lord sitting on a throne high and lofty. Woe is me, I am lost, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips. I am only a man of unclean lips. Only. I am only. But the Lord said to me, do not say, I am only a boy. God said, don't say only. The call stories of the Hebrew Bible can sound so, well, biblical. Moses and the burning bush. For Gideon, and it is an angel of the Lord under an oak tree. His call story goes on for chapters, and it all starts with a stormy wind that came out of the north. Isaiah tells of an angel and some hot coals touching his lips. Here in Jeremiah, then the Lord put out a hand and touched my mouth. These call stories, these theophanies, come with all the divine flair that a reader of the Old Testament has come to expect. The detail of God touching, angels acting, mouths and lips anointed, they sort of make Jesus' call of the disciples, rather pedestrian. That whole drop your nets and follow is kind of barren compared to the call of Jeremiah and his prophet colleagues. Prophets, angels, burning bushes, burning coals, voices, the touch of God, the word of the Lord. The Bible's world seemingly so far from our world, our experience, our relationship with God. Yet, that strange old world of the Bible hits surprisingly, uncomfortably, timelessly close to home and close to the heart when God says to Jeremiah, don't say only. Only. I'm only. God must hear it all the time. Still. Do not say, I am only a boy, for you shall go to all to whom I send you, and you shall speak whatever I command you. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you to deliver you. Don't say only, for I am with you. So far beyond prophets and preachers is the call of God. The God we know in and through Jesus Christ calls each one of us, sends each one of us, anoints each one of us, empowers each one of us to a deeper, profound life of discipleship in and through him. You remember the last words of the risen Jesus to his disciples, to the church, to you and to me in the Gospel of Matthew. Remember, I am with you always to the end of the age. Don't say only. Frank was a member of my first congregation. He was old enough to be my grandfather when we arrived to serve that congregation. He was the church's all-around handy person. Kathy and I still have the mailbox that he made for us. the frame around which he put on a metal mailbox, and then with the letters from the hardware store that stick on the wood. I'm guessing he didn't quite understand, but he didn't bat an eye when we asked him if he could go back and get some more letters so it could say, Cook Davis. One day, as Frank was putzing around the church doing some odd job or another, I asked him if he'd ever served as an elder on session. I was just curious. His response was swift and strong. Oh, no, 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 no. I'm not religious enough. I'm only a guy who is good at fixing stuff. It didn't take long for me to begin to hear the stories about Frank back during World War II. For some reason I never knew and never asked about, Frank was unable to serve in the military. And during the war, he was one of a very few men left in that small town. The stories came from folks in the church and folks beyond the church, people telling me how Frank pretty much took care of the whole town during the war, especially those whose husbands and fathers were serving overseas, caring for widows and those whose husbands were prisoners of war or landing at Normandy. Serving as an elder may not have been for Frank. But don't say only. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God is this, to care for orphans and widows in their distress. That's James chapter 1. Don't say only. God's call to Jeremiah continues. Now I put my words in your mouth. See, today I appoint you over nations and over kingdoms to pluck up and to pull down, to destroy and to overthrow, to build and to plant. For a reader who likes to keep score, that's 4 teardowns and 2 constructions. 4 negatives and only 2 positives. Pluck up, pull down, destroy, overthrow, build, plant. By any math, that's a call with a lot of judgment and a bit of hope. It's an equation, a balance, a ratio that is reflected throughout the book of Jeremiah and the testimony of Jeremiah's life. The call of God pushing against the worldview of nations and kingdoms, pushing and bringing discomfort to the powers that be. The voice of Jeremiah, the book of Jeremiah, according to Old Testament professor Walter Brueggemann, quote, it's a hard and demanding theological tradition and mostly unwelcome. A line of teaching and perception not so fully seduced by the world's promises that too often float around unchallenged or worse, unnoticed. The call of Jeremiah is a crisp and lasting reminder that the word of the Lord will always be in opposition to the empires of this world. I appoint you over nations and over kingdoms. A preacher doesn't have to work very hard these days to affirm that all of us are pretty much up to our eyeballs, in over our heads when it comes to the ways of nations and kingdoms. And with a nod to the hard and demanding theological tradition embodied in Jeremiah and his prophetic call, you and I are called to live out our faith amid the ongoing and ever-growing dissonance and discomfort that comes as we cling to the gospel of Jesus Christ and strive to live the everydayness of our faith in this blasted world. To use Brueggemann's image, God is calling us to hear the teaching of Jesus, to follow him in a life of discipleship, knowing full well that it is in conflict with the promises of the world that try to seduce us. God calling each one of us to a life of discipleship in, to, and for the world. God calling us to be a part of the body of Christ, refusing to say only to the call of God on our lives. Brian Blunt is now the retired president of Union Presbyterian Seminary in Richmond, Virginia. And he taught New Testament for many years on this campus. Brian raised his family in the Witherspoon Street Presbyterian Church, and in my early years of ministry at Nassau Church, Brian and I would have lunch at Karen's Chinese restaurant on Witherspoon Street about once a month. Does anybody remember Karen's Chinese restaurant? Brian was instrumental in helping me to understand and then start to build a relationship with the Witherspoon congregation 23-some years ago. At that point in time, Brian was beginning his work on the book of Revelation that resulted in a commentary and several other monographs. And I attended a lecture that he gave entitled Preacher as Prophet. Preacher as Prophet. Over lunch, a few weeks after that lecture, I brought up the subject of local preachers and that call to speak a prophetic word to their congregation. My own sense was that a preacher ought to establish a pastoral relationship first, maybe even over a few years, as I was attempting to do back then here at Nassau. Tend to the pastoral things first, and then later say harder things from the pulpit out of a trusted pastoral relationship. Brian, do you think preachers are called to be pastors first or prophets first? And without missing a beat, Brian said, yes. Firmly asserting that the gospel itself comes with a disconcerting word to the nations and kingdoms of this world, to you and to me, to pluck up and pull down, to destroy and to overthrow, to build and to plant. And of course, Dr. Blunt would be the first to add that the gospel's call is not just for pastors, preachers, and prophets. A bit more than a week ago, I was standing in the pouring rain in Northern Ireland, shocking, pouring rain, with a group of friends and colleagues. We were standing on the wall that surrounds the city of Derry in Northern Ireland. We had come to Northern Ireland to learn about the history of the conflict, what folks in Northern Ireland refer to as the Troubles, and hear from those who are working hard to build and preserve what they pray is a lasting peace. And there in Derry, we listened to two men, Mickey and Peter, one Catholic, one Protestant. Both had participated in violence. Peter, the Presbyterian, who seemed to be a bit younger than me, had spent 14 years in prison. He had been involved with the Protestant paramilitary group. Peter and Mickey were now reconciled friends, working to help others on both sides of the history, build relationships, and work especially with youth to try to stop the never-ending cycle of hatred and violence. At one point, a member of our group asked Peter how he was able to move beyond the mindset of violence and bitterness and hate. How did he get himself away from it? And Peter told us that as Presbyterians, we would understand that he never really had a Damascus Road experience, referring to the conversion of the Apostle Paul described in the book of Acts. And Peter told us of the day he went to visit the mother of a dear friend of his who had been killed in the conflict. In her grief and heartbreak, she said to him, "The violence, the killing, the conflict has to stop. How many more mothers have to suffer like this? You have to stop, Peter." Peter told us that he knew right then that she was right. His life forever changed by the words of a mother with a broken heart. It was a Damascus Road-like experience, coming from the voice of a grieving prophet who refused to say only and spoke in opposition to the powers of the present darkness. The violence, the killing, and the conflict has to stop, Peter. The tradition defines minor prophets as the collection of the 12 shorter books of the Hebrew prophets in the Old Testament, minor as opposed to longer books of Isaiah and Jeremiah, minor as in Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. Yes, I'm Presbyterian, it's written right here. But what if a minor prophet could refer to something someone other than a book in the Hebrew Bible? What if a minor prophet was simply a child of God who, in their own way, chooses to do justice and love kindness and walk humbly with God? The risen Christ has promised to be with us always to the end of the age. The risen Christ is calling us to cling to the gospel of Jesus Christ and strive to live the everydayness of our faith in this blasted, broken world. And the God we know in and through Jesus Christ is calling us to not say only. Instead, God is calling you and me to be minor prophets, to be minor prophets. Thanks be to God.